Welcome to RHRealityTech.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, I'll be covering the Gosnell verdict and its aftermath. Also, a researcher from Guttmacher comes on to explain to us exactly what kind of obstacles women face when getting funding for abortion. Angelina Jolie, who is one of those celebrities who seems to rise above normal human concerns most of the time, made a very human announcement recently.
Angelina Jolie made a surprise announcement this morning. The Oscar winner is revealing she had a double mastectomy. She announces surgery in an op-ed for the New York Times. It was performed earlier this year.
Jolie says she went through the procedure to reduce her risk of cancer. Ben Tracy is in Los Angeles. Ben, good morning.
Nora and Charlie, good morning. Angelina Jolie says with a history of cancer in her family and an inherited gene mutation, that a double mastectomy was her best choice. She says she's telling the world about it because she wants to be an example for other women.
There's some medical controversy over preventive mastectomies, but Jolie got the expensive genetic testing to confirm she had what she said was an 87% chance of getting breast cancer. Unfortunately, as she noted in her op-ed, most women cannot afford that $3,000 test, even if their doctors think their family history necessitates it. To no one's great surprise and everyone's approval, Kermit Gosnell, the sadistic-seeming doctor of Philadelphia who preyed on low-income women and performed illegal abortions as well as infanticide, has been convicted of 3 counts of murder and 1 of manslaughter. NPR did a report looking at the impact that this case will have on the abortion debate. It was an okay segment, but I think it's worth offering a few important correctives. To start off with, they interviewed RH Reality Check's own executive editor, Jody Jacobson, and she kicked ass, of course.
Was he an outlier, or are there more abortion providers like him who just haven't been discovered yet? Abortion rights backers insist he's an exception. Jody Jacobson runs RH Reality Check, an online daily news service about reproductive rights and sexual politics.
The fact is that what he did was illegal, unethical, unscrupulous, illegal. And it bears no comparison to safe abortion care or even late abortion care because he performed abortions post-viability on women without indications for such. So they were illegal.
Jacobson says most states have laws that bar abortions late in pregnancy, except when there are medical reasons.
If you have a late abortion situation in the third trimester, you are facing either a threat to the life or the health of the mother or a fetus with anomalies incompatible with life.
I want to agree with everything Jody said, but add this. I don't even really think the outlier language is appropriate because that assumes there's a scale and he somehow fell on it. That is wholly and completely the wrong way to understand this. The better way is to think of illegal providers as alternatives that desperate women turn to because they have no access to safe legal help. I believe and think there's growing evidence that there's a growing black market for abortion in this country. To be perfectly clear, most people selling illegal abortions on the black market aren't sick, greedy sadists like Kermit Gosnell. In fact, most of the black market seems to be websites that purport to be selling abortion drugs purchased overseas. But there's no telling what's in those drugs, and women are clearly turning to black markets for the same reason they turned to Gosnell, because they didn't think they had another choice. The more safe legal clinics are shut down, the more women will turn to black market websites, and the higher the chance that there's another Gosnell out there. Of course, while Jody was a good, reputable source, they also, for balance, had to talk to an anti-choicer. And there's really not much you can do here. There aren't any honest sources from that side. So Marjorie Dannenfelser, of the slanderously named Susan B. Anthony list, went on and claimed to have information about other rogue providers doing the same thing. So she's either not telling the truth, or she has information about serial killers committing infanticide, and for some reason has not called the police. But she's so busy trying to exploit this crime to try to take away women's rights to bother with niceties like, you know, like reporting a crime she claims she has real information on.
Meanwhile, Dannenfelser says she hopes the case will help efforts to pass legislation to ban abortions after a certain point in pregnancy.
So the question would be, is there a point where the civil right of the unborn child comes into play? And there is a solid majority that says that late in pregnancy, that point exists. You know, anywhere from 18 to 20 weeks, there is a good 60, 70, 80% support for that type of measure.
Lowering the gestation limits wouldn't have done anything because Gosnell wasn't actually performing legal abortions. He was delivering babies after the legal limit and killing them, often lying to the mothers about how far along they were. In fact, none of the restrictions proposed by anti-choicers would do squat to stop someone who is committing already illegal actions. Not waiting limits, not mandatory scripts, not banning pre-viability abortions. All that will do is create more Gosnells, as women who can't get early, safe, legal abortions turn to illegal, unsafe providers in their desperation. That's why the conclusion that this will impact the reproductive rights debate seems off to me.
One thing is clear coming out of the Gosnell case. It is likely to once again shift the emphasis of the abortion debate. Until recently, it's been on birth control, where abortion rights groups enjoy broader public support. Now it's likely to swing back to later abortions, where abortion opponents have the public opinion edge.
Anti-choicers might get a popularity boost from making that shift, and they might even get some illegal abortion bans passed for it. But the notion that this changes anything in terms of public opinion is completely wrong. Anti-choicers need to convince the public that the vast majority of abortions, where the patient hasn't started to show at all, are no different than much later abortions. They've been trying that for 40 years and haven't gotten anywhere. They also have to convince the public that contraception is evil. Basically, the debate is where it's always been. And as excited and happy as anti-choicers were about Kermit Gosnell, this entire case hasn't really changed anything about the politics of reproductive rights. I'd like to welcome Rachel Jones to the program. Rachel is a senior research associate for the Guttmacher Institute, and she's here today to talk about a recent study looking at how women pay for abortion. Welcome to RealityCast, Rachel.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So your study shows that while most women who get abortions have health insurance, most of them still pay out of pocket. Why is that?
Right. So this study, the idea that most abortion patients have insurance but are paying out of pocket has been found in previous studies. But the contribution of this one was understanding why, and in particular, why women with private health insurance. Again, we know nationally two-thirds of women with private health insurance who are obtaining abortions pay out of pocket. And so this study really contributed by filling out that story a little bit. So, for example, among women who had private health insurance in our study, we found that women who had private health insurance who were paying out of pocket most commonly said that the reason they were doing this is because their insurance doesn't pay for abortion services. And then the second most common reason, about a quarter of women who had private health insurance and were paying out of pocket said that they weren't sure if their insurance covered that service. And then about 13% of these women said that they simply didn't want it, they didn't want their insurance to pay for it. And this latter two patterns we kind of interpret to mean that as a form of stigma, that maybe women didn't want it on their health records or were concerned about issues of confidentiality and so didn't want to use their private health insurance or weren't motivated to see if their private health insurance would pay for this particular procedure.
So one of the things I thought was interesting was, so I guess my real question then is, if they believe this, how true is it? How often does their insurers cover abortion?
Right. Well, so that is still a little bit of an unknown because we're operating from the perspective of the abortion patients themselves, and, you know, we weren't able to actually look at the plans they had. I can say, you know, the most common reason women said that they were paying out of pocket even though they had private health insurance is their insurance doesn't pay for abortion. We did have a follow-up question on there that said, and how do you know, more or less said, you know, and how do you know your health insurance plan doesn't pay for it? And they said, Well, I just kind of assume that that's the case. So again, that and this pattern of women, you know, overtly saying, I don't want to use my health insurance or saying I'm not sure if it covers it, it could actually be the case that some of these plans do cover it. But again, presumably because of the stigma around abortion or because of concerns around confidentiality, women aren't motivated to use their plans or even to seek out or determine if their plans cover this procedure.
It really does go to show that, like, the notion that abortion is somehow not legitimate health care is kind of filtered down even to that level.
Exactly.
So the average price of an abortion is low for outpatient surgery, but it's still pretty high. It's nearly $500
right,
on average. How did women get the money to pay for their abortions if they weren't using their insurance coverage?
Right. And when talking about, you know, maybe in the relative scheme of healthcare, you know, $500 for a simple medical procedure doesn't seem like a lot of money. But you have to also remember that most women obtaining abortions are poor, low income. And again, they're paying for this procedure out of pocket. So they rely on a number of strategies to do this. About half of women, sometimes including women who were using their health insurance, about half of women obtaining abortions in our study relied on somebody else to help pay for the procedure. Most commonly, women relied on their male partners or the man involved in the pregnancy. About 30% of the women in our study were obtaining money from this source. And then again, among the half of women who relied on somebody else, about 1 in 5 relied on a discount from the clinic, relied on an abortion fund, or relied on another family member to help pay for these costs. And then again, we also found that, this is where I'm going to have to turn pages. I hope I can repeat whatever you need me to. And then we also found that a substantial minority of women, about one-third of the women in our study, report that they had to delay or forego paying bills, things like utilities, car payments, food or rent, in order to come up with the funds to pay out of pocket for the abortion services.
And considering that so many of them are mothers them already, that's pretty scary, not just for them, but for their families.
Right, exactly.
So not only do women have to pay $500 to the doctor or try to come up with the money somehow, they also have all these external costs to getting an abortion. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we found in our study, this was another contribution of this study. It was the first one to kind of nationally look at some of the ancillary costs of abortion. So again, we got a lot of women, poor and low-income women, who are paying $500 for the procedure itself, but we also asked about some of the ancillary costs, and we found that about two-thirds of patients, for example, had to pay transportation costs to get to and from the facility, on average about $44, and that a quarter of women reported lost wages on an average amount of $200 per day. So again, to many of us, maybe $44 doesn't sound like a lot, but we're talking about, again, women who have already scraped together $500 to pay for a procedure, don't have a lot of money to begin with. So $44 can really be a struggle to come up with. And then also, again, something obviously that this study couldn't get at, but is when you start looking at all these financial barriers and financial burdens that women are having to cover in order to access abortion, you know, obviously there's going to be a number of women who are just not able to come up with the money and who aren't even able to obtain it. Abortion because of these financial barriers.
$44, I think, to the audience will sound like a lot in terms of transportation costs. I mean, that's what, a full tank of gas? So why is it so expensive?
Right. And admittedly, you know, we just got the costs. I would assume that, right, that women who are traveling further distances are going to have to pay more in transportation costs, whether it's because they're having to pay more in gas or buying a bus ticket or a plane ticket. And of course, that's just the average amount. The range in transportation cost was, you know, from $0 to several hundred for women who had to buy plane tickets.
I think it's kind of amazing that people have to fly to get an abortion when there's still a clinic in every state, but apparently that's how much distance there is.
Right, exactly. And again, you know, depending on the type of the procedure, I think a lot of the women who have to, and again, this isn't something that was addressed in the study, but typically I think women who have to fly to obtain a procedure are maybe obtaining second trimester procedures. And there's not necessarily a provider in every state who's doing second trimester procedures.
So what kind of things can be done to bring these costs down? How can women not have to pay hundreds of dollars, sometimes even going over $1,000 for what is supposed to be a simple, like, 5-minute procedure?
Right. Well, I mean, the obvious policy solution to this is to, you know, for example, overturn the Hyde Amendment and make it so that federal Medicaid dollars can be used to pay for abortions for women who have Medicaid coverage, and to remove. Increasingly, we're seeing restrictions around private health insurance plans at the state and other levels, saying that private health insurance plans can't pay for abortion services. And so these types of restrictions obviously need to be removed, because theoretically, right, as we move forward, the overwhelming majority of women are going to have health insurance, but it doesn't look like most of them, or a lot of them, are not going to be able to use it, whether it's public or private, are not going to be able to use it to pay for abortion services. So obviously, removing these types of restrictions would substantially increase access to abortion services.
And as for women who are insured and can use that insurance to cover abortion, what do you think could be done to help them realize that that's an option?
Well, because again, this is a little bit of a black box, because we don't know the extent, you know, we don't know how many women actually have plans, private health insurance plans, that pay for abortion that aren't using it. So certainly, I mean, I think a lot of clinics actually increase awareness, because a lot of times one of the first questions they ask is, do you have health insurance, and then what type? And again, we know anecdotally that a lot of women are surprised to learn that their health insurance plan actually does pay for abortion services. So I think there's actually a lot being done at that level. Now, of course, there are clinics who don't, because of all the hassle that comes with using health insurance plans, that don't accept insurance and so aren't able to act as an educator of that sort. So I guess it just really needs to be more of a grassroots. I honestly, I don't have a very coherent, sorry, Amanda, I don't have a very coherent answer on that one of how to create awareness about private health insurance.
No, that's good. I mean, it basically suggests that we just need to be having more conversations focused on funding.
Right.
My guest today has been Rachel Jones. The paper is called At What Cost? Payment for Abortion Care by U.S. Women. You can read it and other research on abortion, contraception, all sorts of stuff at guttmacher.org. Thanks so much for coming on to RealityCast, Rachel.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Of course, the conviction of Kermit Gosnell meant that the right-wing media went into overtime telling lies. I thought it would be useful to take some time to debunk some of them. The real lesson here, listening to all this, is that the conservative media does not care one teeny-weeny itty-bit about the truth, but will tell any lie, no matter how easily debunked, in order to promote their agenda. Kimberly Guilfoyle of Fox News kicked off the lying marathon when the news broke of the conviction.
Do you think this reignites the issue of right to life versus abortion as a public policy issue?
Bob, great question. I think it does. It puts a spotlight on it. It brings it into the forefront of discussion, especially the media outlets that were brave enough to cover it, like Fox News has been, because you can't have sat in that court and heard the evidence, listened to this and what happened to these babies, and not rethink abortion and choice and all of it.
There are two major lies in that comment, but let's take the first one. That this should cause anyone to rethink abortion. Gallup did polling specifically to gauge if Gosnell changed public opinion on abortion and found that nope, he did not. What anti-choicers are deliberately being stupid about is this. Gosnell broke the law. If he hadn't, he wouldn't be found guilty. People who break the law don't say anything about people who are following the law. The only lesson here is that unnecessary abortion regulations drive patients away from good doctors to illegal, unsafe ones like Gosnell. I'll quote the grand jury report. Quote, Pennsylvania, like other states, permits legal abortion within a regulatory framework. Physicians must, for example, provide counseling about the nature of the procedure. Minors must have parental or judicial consent. All women must wait 24 hours after first visiting the facility in order to fully consider their decision. Gosnell's compliance with such requirements was casual at best. At the Women's Medical Society, the only question that really mattered was whether you had the cash. Too young? No problem. Didn't want to wait? Gosnell provided same-day service. End quote. Waiting periods, parental notification laws, and other unnecessary regulations that drive up the cost. All these things work to give Gosnell patients who would have otherwise gone to Planned Parenthood or other reputable providers. The only people who need to rethink their position are anti-choicers, who support policies that are a godsend to seedy operators like Gosnell. Now for the second lie.
I want to ask Kimberly, the media presence there, is it what you expected? Right. Because early on, they weren't there. You were the first to be there, of the first to be there, and you've been there throughout. Have they now caught on that this is a big story?
The claim that Fox News was covering the story when other news networks were not is a complete, utter, and outrageous lie. Media Matters went ahead and looked at the actual minutes given to the Gosnell story when he was first arrested. CNN devoted 33 minutes to the story, MSNBC devoted 9 minutes, and Fox a whopping 6 minutes. Even if they showed up in court when no one else was there, it's not relevant. It's rare to see cable news devote those kinds of resources to local criminal trials. The fact of the matter is they didn't see fit to cover this story as much as more reputable organizations, and only started to do so when they thought it could be used to establish a phony narrative about a media cover-up that wasn't actually happening. Unsurprisingly, Rush Limbaugh blatantly lied.
Planned Parenthood would love an acquittal. What do you mean, how could anybody want an acquittal on this? You don't know the abortion industry if you don't know how they're looking at it. They're scared to death of this.
I have in front of me Planned Parenthood's statement. It reads, quote, "The jury has punished Kermit Gosnell for his appalling crimes. This verdict will ensure that no woman is victimized by Kermit Gosnell ever again." End quote. I don't know how you parse that and reach the claim that they wanted an acquittal. Oh, unless you're lying, which is what he is doing. And now for the wisdom of wingnuts, blaming sex education for bacteria edition. Yep, that's exactly what right-wing talk show host Matt Barber did on his program. They were discussing an antibiotic-resistant strain of gonorrhea, and Barber blamed sex education.
An antibiotic-resistant strain of gonorrhea, now considered a superbug, has some analysts saying that the bacteria's effects could match those of AIDS, sexually transmitted disease running rampant and with kids younger and younger and younger, teenage pregnancy through the roof. Thanks a lot, left. Comprehensive sex education, you're to blame. Progressives and leftists are to blame for these children suffering the consequences of their lifestyle. They are reaping what they sow, and in large part, the left is to blame.
The fact of the matter is that gonorrhea rates used to be much higher than they are now, but thanks to sex education, people are better both about using condoms and getting tested. The real reason for this antibiotic resistance is, wait for it, evolution. Gonorrhea bacteria are evolving drug resistance, so use condoms, and if you get sick, use all your antibiotic rounds as prescribed to make sure you aren't becoming a petri dish for natural selection. But you can keep having sex.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.